Don't fear death. We are in a time of mass death. And this is going to exponentiate in the coming weeks and months. More and more people are going to fall over dead. That's the meaning of this event. More people are going to find themselves debilitated. More people are going to find themselves with bodies that are suffering. If you are real in realization of who you are, you will not suffer, and you will not feel pain even. So it is that realization that is urgent and essential to go through this period of the end of Kali Yuga, that is the transition from one age to another. So I've been asked by people about the vaccine and the injection, let's call it. Obviously, it's not something that you want to do, but there are some people who can't avoid it, and it very soon may be forcibly put onto people in ways that are unavoidable. So we mustn't be afraid. If you can go to the periphery of society, you're less likely to be impinged on in that way, or at least it will be delayed for the longest time, probably, because they'll start at the core in the cities. And you see that they've mandated first in most countries that the doctors and the people in healthcare are the ones that have to take it. Pilots have to take it. And you know, this is causing many airline flights to be canceled, because pilots get blood clots when you go at 30,000 feet and in a pressurized metal cylinder, it increases the chances for you to suddenly have a stroke. So these things are happening, and now they're mandating in many armies that the active duty soldiers all have to take the jab. Well, this is going to weaken the army. So if any country had sense, why would they weaken their own army? They would like to see the enemy's army get jabbed, but why would they want their own army? So then you have to understand that sovereignty no longer belongs to those governments. They are vassals of another power. So we have to see this in terms of the chain of being and the hierarchies of the situation that extend beyond the boundaries of our planet. And it's only when you can get a cosmic perspective on this that you can begin to understand what is happening in this shift. But it's something that it will stagger most people's imaginations, and so I don't think this is the moment to go into details about that, but it is certainly going to be a time very soon filled with signs and wonders and extraordinary happenings that will be very shocking to most people. But it's not just that's happening. The geophysical changes, the tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanoes, super volcanoes that will be going off, extraordinary events will be happening that will cause mass death, that will not be caused by human beings. So we're seeing a process that is divine in nature. It's not simply a matter of evil. It's a matter of the annihilation of evil and of suffering in the most rapid way possible, that will still give time for those who wish to turn to God to reach liberation and to be able to serve. And it's very important. I think someone asked this question. Are the people who, let's say, take the shot and keel over dead, did they decide that in advance? Yes, everyone's agreed to the karma and the role that they're playing in this drama. It's a drama, and everyone has a certain performance. But death is not the end, and there are many discarnate souls who are actually more effective in influencing what's going on than those who are in bodies today. And those souls who have become connected to God before they die will be able to serve with the angels after they die and can do a lot of very important service. So it is not that, that they are no longer active in the phenomenal plane, it's just that they're not visible to the range of sight of the two eyes. But psychics can see these spirits wandering around, and sometimes you can probably feel the presence of ghosts and of higher entities who visit our space here, and probably those on the love stream have the same experience or imperience. There are beings of an interdimensional sort who are participating in this drama, and we need to understand that one's performance doesn't end with the death of the body. In fact, it may actually accelerate one's circle of influence, let's say, because one can move at the speed of thought. One is not localizable once one has left the anchoring in the physical organism. So that's one aspect of it. And then there was another question that was asked. Someone said, if you say that the world is unreal, that means that it's meaningless. But the contrary is the case. I would say that because it is unreal, it has meaning. Only that which is unreal has meaning. The real has no meaning. The reality is divided into meaning and being, but that which has being is beyond meaning. You can't say God has meaning. God has what we would call meaning moreness, infinite meaning, beyond anything that can be pinned down or described or related. But that which has meaning means it comes within the frame of reference of our loka. The mean means exactly just that, between two extremes. It's like the golden mean. A meaning is a relationship. So that which is unreal is that which has meaning, because it is that which is in flux, that in which the relationality is shifting in such a way that the alteration is producing effects upon one's emotional understanding, one's intellectual understanding. It's the shift and the change and the impermanence that creates the meaningfulness. So all human culture is based on the meaning of the unreal. If you read a great novel, for example, War and Peace by Tolstoy, Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky, Proust's five-volume Remembrance of Time Lost. These are unreal. They're totally fictional. But they have more meaning than anything you'll read in the news or in non-fiction biographies. It's the unreal that is meaningful, not the real. And if you see a play by Chekhov, the people may be real, but the story is unreal. In the same way that we are real as the self, as manifestations of the self, but the story is not real. But it's infinitely meaningful because this is a great epic poem, a play, a drama, a movie in the mind of God. And so it has all the meaning that an infinite intelligence can put into a work of art, and meaning on every level. Not just at the human level, but at the level of all life forms. And even we're talking about interplanetary connectivity and intergalactic meaning moreness that extends way beyond anything that one could grasp within the limited intelligence. As you saw that Arjun had to recognize that he couldn't understand anything that was being shown to him. It was too much, right? What is meaningful is unreal, and it is that which we can contain and grasp within our limited intellects. As we rise to higher and higher levels, more and more of the meaning of the unreal phenomenal plane becomes available to us. And that meaning produces joy, and it produces power. So this is, it's very important not to to try to conflate unreality with meaninglessness. So that's one aspect of it. But another aspect, when it is said that the world is unreal, that means that it's unreal as a multiplicity of separate objects. But it is very real as a single whole. So Thich Nhat Hanh is very famous for saying, if you see a flower, do you see it as it really is? Or do you see the clouds that poured rain that are contained in the flower? Do you see the soil and all the nutrients in it? Do you see the sunshine that it contains? Do you see the effort of the gardener? Do you see the sunshine and the alternation of the seasons that have produced it? Do you see all the factors? The whole universe is present in the flower. So if you see it that way, it's real. But if you say, it's a flower, and you only take it as that object, then you're having a profane relationship to it. And so what is unreal is not that which is, but it's the ego's false perception and differentiation of the one wholeness of reality into separate parts that are not meaningfully connected into a whole, not integrated, because the ego mind is unable to have that level of integration. So it's only love that unites. The more that you love the world, the more that you see the miraculous nature of it and the presence of God within it, not just the sunshine and the soil and all the five elements, but the presence of the intelligence that created, sustains it, and will destroy it and then give it rebirth, just as the flower dies and becomes the compost and then is reborn into a new flower form. So death and life are part of a single whole. And that's true at the individual level, and it's true at the cosmic level. And so this is the moment that we're going through that level of life and death transition. But it's of ultimate meaningfulness. But it's also beyond meaning. When you reach the nothing, when you reach into the next octave of chakras, then you get into a level of such dense bliss and meaning moreness that it can't be spoken. You're literally speechless. It's indescribable. You will know the secrets of God, but you won't be able to list them and teach them in some formula, because it goes beyond what can be put into mere language. And that's the level of intelligence that we have to reach to grasp that. There's a living philosopher in France named Jean-Luc Marion who speaks about such things. He talks about it in terms of a religious icon that gives one a sense of the presence of God, or you see a great work of art, let's say by Van Gogh or Rembrandt or someone who shows you what cannot be seen with the eyes, but it's somehow there, and you're speechless. You are moved in a way that you cannot try to put into language. And it's that that he calls, Marion calls, a saturated phenomenon. It's so saturated with meaning and with divine presence and intelligence and power that it's beyond something that you can meaningfully respond to, except with awe and with love. And so it's those two wings of our nature that then take us to the source of meaning and being, which is the presence of God as the self.